This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 7, Episode 21, Catches Win Matches. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, we talk about the importance of catches and how to improve catching ability rather than just have lots and lots and lots of practice at catching. We also help a coach who wants to discuss coaching women and girl cricketers. And we talk to a batsman who is having a little bit of trouble when he gets into the 20s and 30s. All that and more coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome again to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, your guide, of course, to better cricket, whether that's coaching or playing it. We're going to help you for the next half an hour or so. And who are we? Well, my name is David Hinchliffe. I look after things. And helping me to do that are two very fine cricket coaches. The first is the Director of Cricket Coaching at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Gareth. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks very much. Yeah, just going for a little stroll whilst doing the podcast. One of my favourite times of the week.
Just patrolling the grounds, making sure there's no poachers, that kind of thing.
But something along those lines, yeah. Or maybe just going down in the street to get a diet coke. One of the two.
Second of all, a man who's no stranger to sprawling grounds, because we know from previous shows he's got a huge mansion. It's Sam Lavery. Hello, Lavers.
Morning, how are you? Very well?
Yeah, very good, thanks. Of course, I didn't mention you're the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School.
I wish I did have a huge mansion, that'd be lovely. And I wish Portsmouth Grammar School was sprawling as well, it would equally be very, very pleasing, but neither are true.
But you must have been getting some cricket done at some stage. The weather's been marvellous around here, so...
Weather was fantastic yesterday, it was beautiful down here, We're really lucky. We had a good game of cricket against another local school in Church's College in the under-15 T20 county stage, which was great fun. Boys played some great cricket. Everyone worked really hard and had a good day. So it was good. One of the boys scored 100 off 60 balls. So enjoyable afternoon.
Very nice. One of the aspects that my team have been thinking about recently is catching. And that reason is that we've been keeping track of this year of how many balls that we've caught and how many balls that we dropped. And the general consensus has been that we need to catch more than we've been catching, which of course is always the case if it's less than 100%, I guess. But I was interested in your viewpoint on this. First of all, if you do keep a track of how many get caught, how many get dropped, And second of all, what you sort of consider to be a reasonable figure to try and achieve. And then once you've got that figure in mind, how do you go about improving it? Is it just a matter of lots and lots and lots of catching? Or is there more subtlety than that? So let's start with a number, because we all like numbers here. So, Gareth, can you put a number on a catch percentage in game situations?
Not really. I do keep track of it, but that's more for me rather than for general consumption. I've been involved in organisations that have done that and been very studious about taking in that information and also delivering out that information. But what I tend to find when you do that is that people then make a decision about whether they're going to go for a catch or not in those 50-50. So if we're trying to develop a fearless fielding unit that will have a go at everything, then you can't often link that up to a very stat-driven, was it a chance, wasn't it a chance type environment. So the two don't go hand in hand. And I'd prefer to have everybody trying to create as many chances as possible to take wickets than somebody who will make a decision to stand off one because they don't want to create that chance and then obviously have the opportunity to drop it. So I keep a tally just for me, just for my own records, really. And it wouldn't be something that I'd discuss because to me the intention is bigger than the stat keeping, really. And in terms of how do you get that better, I think you're just always putting practices together and you're challenging people to make that half chance. And to me, that's the way that you develop fielding units. That's the way that you develop confidence. So you can't really fail. As long as you give it a crack, you can't really fail is sort of my adage. And then over time, because they're getting lots of repetition, they're getting lots of success, they're not fearing failure, then you come up with the ball more often than not.
Catching is one of those things, Lavens, that it's very quick. You're very quick to be able to see improvements. If you do a lot of catching practice, then you can see people improve very, very quickly. So do you think it is just a matter of getting the volume in?
I think volume is really key, but I think Gara's alluded to the way chances are created and people are maybe taking them or maybe turning them away if there's a stats base there. But catching probably is a reflection of more than just what you do with your eyes and your hands. It's probably a reflection of your athletic ability as well. If you think about how most catches are taken, I would imagine that quite a high percentage of catches are a result of some kind of movement prior to the catch. So I would think that athletic ability and improvement of that is an immediate way, again, that you can improve your catching. So volume is key in terms of getting the ball in your hands and having as many different types of catches come at you that you can do, which is not only not only useful, but also keeps the training interesting and keeps people active, that they're doing different things and having more than just a cover catch hit at them 50 times. But how they get from where they start to where the ball is going to be and how they actually develop that movement and that speed and agility, athletic ability, etc., is probably as key for me, because if you make every catch an easy catch, then you'll catch most of them, won't you? So the easiest way to do that is get in a good position.
I think there's definitely a place, isn't there, for making, having drills and having sessions where it's very, very, very difficult and there's a lot of failure built into that, because if there's a lot of failure going on, then you're at the edge of what you can do, right?
Definitely. We have what's called extreme catching sessions. And so I might say for this next 5 minutes, I am going to hit them and most of them are going to be out of your reach. But your aim is to go for every one. It's to put every centimetre of effort in to try and get to it. It's to put that full length dive in when you don't think that you've got a chance of getting in the same postcode as the ball. And then just seeing if we actually get a hand on it, or we might even come up with the thing still above the grass. And those sessions are then about going, right, now I'm going to hit you some normal catches. And all of a sudden, the normal catch becomes the easy catch because you've trained to that level. But you have to frame it, like with every practice that we do, you have to frame the extreme stuff in a way which makes it a challenge as opposed to a threat. And then obviously you take the level down a little bit, only a little bit, and all of a sudden you're in a position where you start to come up with the ball loads and loads on things that you probably thought was quite tough 20 minutes beforehand. So that's the crucial thing for me, and just making sure you frame the session right is absolutely spot on.
And that's where I guess Lavers' delivery skills are really important there as well, aren't they? To be able to put the ball where you want to put it is a really vital part of a coach's role.
Absolutely. If you can't put the ball and create the environment and create the drill that you want to put into place, then even with the best intentions, it's probably not going to be as successful as you'd like. So it is key that we, as well as working on the skills of the players that we're working with, we also work on our own skills as much as we can. And before long, we'll have people hopefully being able to nick a ball right-handed, left-handed, sidearm a ball right-handed, left-handed, those kind of things, which actually are really useful skills to have.
So let's finish off with a couple of examples, some actual practical things that people can go and do where they say to themselves, right, okay, we're not catching as many as we should this year. At the next training session, we're going to do what?
Well, yesterday I had a session where we had some breakout things off the side of the nets. I put two catch-it boards down with two areas to defend as a fielder and catch as a fielder, and effectively had as many balls as it took with a fairly soft ball. as many balls as it took for you to take 20 catches. But the other thing was that every ball is there to go full bore on. So if it's bottom right hand corner, you get a finger onto it, it hits the post, then you save two. So that's an example. It didn't need me over there. They all trained at an incredible intensity. But everybody had 20 catches and probably 35 balls to field in a short space of time. And there was no such thing as failure on the ones that were going towards the bottom and top corners. You just had to give it a go.
Yeah, you're going to catch 0% of the ones that you don't go for. That's always
correct.
The case. So,
absolutely. You know, if you don't go, you'll never know.
If you catch one in 20 of those impossibly difficult ones, you're ahead of the game, aren't you?
Yeah, definitely. And going back to Sam's physicality point earlier, you know, whilst you're doing that, you're training not just your body, but also your mind. You're sort of pushing that envelope of what is possible, which is fantastic.
What about you, Levis? Have you got any pet drills at the moment which you feel are working well to push the fielding standards up?
Well, I'm actually doing a new drill tonight, which I'm going to try this afternoon, which is just a really simple drill where we've got five or six big coned areas out around the outfield, and we've just got a fielder who's just going to try and return a ball from each one that's thrown from our wicket-keeping position. So it's a bit of a throwing and catching drill. So one person will be on the stump in the middle, and they're just throwing out to that boundary ring. And then the ball's going to get thrown back, and we're going to try and get it all the way around the pitch through all six rings without the ball being dropped. Bit of a fitness exercise for the guy on the outside, and they swap over. So interesting to see how accurate they can be with their throwing, if they can judge the length as well as the lines, but also interesting to see if they can take those catches, which inevitably will be pretty tough at some stage. So just something different now. We've had quite a lot of fielding and catching over the last 6 or 7 weeks, so we're going to give something different a go and try and keep them interested, but it will hopefully be something that that challenges them in a slightly different way to normal.
Good. Well, certainly food for thought there. And if you are, you know, if you're in a situation where you're doing fielding practice and maybe you're getting a little bit fed up of doing the same old thing over and over again, think about maybe overloading things a bit more and try and get that done so you are training hard and playing easy. I guess that's another one of those things that you hear a lot, but you really need to put it into practice if you want it to work. Right, let's finish this section with the yes-no round. That's three questions that can only be answered yes or no, no matter how much more that the team want to say. I've got the question, so let's fire away. First question, saying nothing is as powerful as saying something.
Yes. Yes.
Second question, strength and conditioning is more for injury prevention than enhancing performance.
No. No.
Third question, it's difficult to keep things simple.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, let's go into the questions section now on the show. That's a couple of questions that have been sent in by listeners to the show, or maybe readers to the Pitch Vision Academy website. And we're going to answer those questions, and then we're going to choose a winner at the end, which is a prize of an online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And you can send your questions into us for future shows by emailing coach@pitchvision.com. And you can get in touch with us in a few other ways as well, which we'll tell you about towards the end of the show. So the first question is from Andrew, a regular listener and also a regular reader to the Pitch Vision site, because we've recently put up an article from a former women's cricketer about preventing injuries specifically in women's cricket. So this is kind of a follow-up question from this, so I'll read the whole thing. I've been coaching three young female seam bowlers in all county age group squads, all on the way to becoming very tidy cricketers. I tend to use the same technical advice as I would with boys of the same age, something approaching the 4 or 10 pegs method with a long delivery stride, a braced front leg, chest shoulder thrust and a follow through. Given the physiological differences between boys and girls, as detailed in the article, they've got a wider pelvis and that alters the alignment of the knee and ankle and it leads to knee injuries. Is this model appropriate for women bowlers? Without a detailed study, I can recall several of the current England women's international seam bowlers being more front-on with a shorter delivery stride and upright at the point of release. Is this down to a genuine physiological difference or just because they've not been coached in any other way?
Well, I think there is an element of coaching involved in that. But also I think there's a lot of preference involved in that as well. So if you look at some of the people that you could refer to within the England setup, which came from the question, you've got Anya Trubsole, you know, front on bowler, you know, probably one of the more feared ones in world women's cricket. Fantastic record. She was at Somerset Academy years ago when I was there, and you know, an intimidating character to face, even for the boys at those ages. It was fantastic practice for them. But yeah, very much front on, but an effective bowler, very much bringing the stumps into play the whole time. So yeah, she is front on. The other one, Jenny Gunn, who's had a good career in international cricket, won several Ashes. Again, front on bowler, but I don't think that's anything to do with the physiological makeup. I think that's more to do with preference, because then you look at Catherine Brunt. Catherine is a midway bowler. Again, lots of success, slightly further round, not side on, classic side on. Bowling action, I suppose, as the MCC manual would have had, but a really effective operator, very aggressive. And that, again, is preference. And then finally, the next one off of Bluck is Tash Farrant, really. And Tash is sideways on. So, again, that's more to do with preference than it is about, I'd say, biological or physiological elements associated with each of the people. In terms of coaching, I think coaching generally, not just for the girls, but has moved on quite a lot. All I would say about any tent pegs or anything like that, they are a starting point, the same way as having a plan of how you're going to get 350 over game. You have a starting point, and we adapt accordingly in playing an innings and building an innings as a team. We adapt according to the conditions, and actually no different as a coach either. We adapt according to the conditions, which is that person that is placed in front of us as well. So certainly don't be a slave to those tent peg things. Even Stephen Jones, who's obviously a massive advocate of four tent pegs, talks about idiosyncrasies as well. And certainly I would suggest they're a really good starting point that we can work from for both genders. But ultimately we are working with human beings, and we need to adapt our practice around them. So that would be my simple answer. But yes, there are two fantastic examples of front-on bowlers within the England setup, but also there are examples of midway and sideways on bowlers that are either done really well over the years or are coming up and will be the next kids off the block.
So, Lavis, do you think there needs to be any difference, specifically a difference in coaching between men and women, girls and boys, or is it just it's one of those things where gender is not important? It's just down to, you know, how someone's body is set up, and you know, whether the male or female makes no difference.
Yeah, I think there probably will be differences, but prescribing a difference and saying that because you're male or because you're female, you will have this difference, it probably isn't something we can go down. I would more be pursuing really educating people across the board, and so people are hopefully in a position where they can approach an individual in an individual way. So really just educating people about movement and bowling and the technical side of it, which is something that has been feared a lot over the years, and I think is generally improving pretty well. But being aware of how personal idiosyncrasies, as Gareth said there, will vary from person to person, and as long as we have an understanding of the pros and cons of things and how movement works and how it impacts on performance and how it impacts on health and injury and those kind of things, then we should be able to apply good information to each individual, whether they're male or female. So that would be my recommendation over the prescription towards one or the other.
And certainly when it comes to strength and conditioning, I remember a few years ago, I read an article by an American S&C coach called Michael Boyle, who said, here's my training plan for female athletes. And it's exactly the same as my training plan for male athletes. If I want to make sure that they want to avoid knee injuries, because women might be more susceptible to knee injuries because of that difference in the Q, what they call the Q angle. But it doesn't matter whether you're male or female, you still train in the same way. So I suppose you can extrapolate that to cricket technique as well and go, well, you know, you're still looking to do the same thing. It's just you need to work out how each individual goes about that.
Yeah, you could almost say that you're gonna separate people into being male and female would be similar to separating people into being tall or short or something like that. It's as long as you've got a kind of broad a breadth of information, you can work with an individual hopefully, and whoever that individual isn't too important as long as you've got the right information to give to them.
I think the biggest thing for me around the difference between coaching girls and boys, and this is backed up by research, it's not just through experience, this is that in many cases the girls are people that like to do more teamy type things. So therefore many of our private coaching sessions at school, or many of our in timetable sessions, we do our best to team up girls with one another to practice alongside each other rather than having that one-to-one situation. Now obviously that's not a complete 100% blanket that you can throw over the top of that, but certainly your language needs to shift a little bit. It needs to be more orientated towards everybody rather than just that individual, because often the girls find it less easy to connect with one-to-one feedback and one-to-one praise in particular, where they tend to get a little bit embarrassed about it. Whereas, and again, I'm being a bit generic, but in terms of boys, for many boys, that is absolute music to their ears. It is geared more around them. And, you know, that is a point of difference between boys and girls. But again, that's all underpinned significantly by research over the years.
Yeah, and again, if you were to say that is true in all cases, you would not be right. But as a general rule, it's a good place to start, and then you can adapt as you go to different characters, depending on how they respond to things. Exactly. I mean, yeah, that's what good coaching is about, isn't it? Being able to adapt in that way when you come across something which is outside of the norm, which happens quite a lot, doesn't it? It makes you scratch your head for a while.
It does. That's a good point. When we start scratching our heads, that means we're starting to look at becoming really good coaches.
Okay, the next question is from Hardik. And Hardik says, my season has just started. I've played 6 games so far, but I've not scored big yet. I keep getting out in the 20s and 30s. I've been caught behind 3 times with the ball moving away. I've been caught in the covers once to a left-arm spinner, and I got bowled by an off-spinner trying to play a back foot cover drive and the ball stayed low. So I always start good, but I can't score big. How can we help?
Well, a good starting point. You know, if you can get to 20 and 30 in most of your innings, then you're doing better than most players that are out there. So firstly, congratulations on that. And often the first 20 balls are the most difficult, and certainly most dismissals occur within those. And then when we get beyond 20 and 30 with our score, we should be looking at other aspects, not just our technique, but other aspects of the game which might be letting us down. And I think we've talked about it a lot on the show before, but the best players are the ones that stay in the here and now for the longest possible time. They don't future project. And certainly, as I wasn't one of the best players, I would find myself getting to 30, which used to be the sort of staple diet of if you're averaging 30, you're going all right. And then the first thing that I would do would be to future project towards getting a 50. And then equally, when I got to 50, I'd start to future project towards getting 100, instead of actually staying in the here and now and making some really coherent and relevant decisions based on the stimulus and the conditions that are around me at that given time. So that would be my first starting point. It generally is with guys that score 20s and 30s and are good enough to get to those figures, I would start with, right, let's really analyse where you are when you're in this position of 20 to 30. Where is the mind? Is it ahead? Is it dwelling on things in the past, or is it actually in the now? Because that's where we want to be as much as we possibly can.
And it certainly seems that, you know, it's a small sample size, isn't it? It is 6 games, and the dismissals have been varied, so it's difficult to spot any kind of technical issue in that area, isn't it? And go, well, actually, you know, I think you're getting out because of some kind of technical error that you're making. Actually, it's far more likely to be something that's going on in the head, especially if there's no real pattern and it's quite a small sample size like that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's only six games, isn't it? And by the sound of it, you've got a few good starts already, so things are going well. But don't necessarily look for a reason, and there won't necessarily always be a reason there for you, because it may be that you've got six good balls along the way, and maybe your ball's kept low in there as well, and it's quite difficult. But I think the point that Gareth was going down was really good. I think try not to relate why you got out to your position, or try not to relate yourself in your innings to your position between 0 and 10 or 10 and 50 or 50 and 100. Just try and relate what you're doing to the last ball and the next ball, and try and keep things as focused as on what your objective is. And I think a lot of the time people go out, and again, Gareth may have kind of suggested this already, but people go out and they're really focusing on what they're doing in the immediate moment for the first five balls, 10 balls, 20 balls, whatever it is. And then that concentration starts to drift away from that. They start to think about other things. And for someone who's getting to 20 regularly, getting to 30 regularly, that does sound like you really focus well on the early part of that innings, and you really are zoned in on the ball and what you're doing, and your decisions are strong. And as the time goes on, maybe that's just something that you need to have a little restart of the innings when you get to 25. Can we just give yourself that little nudge and say, right, I need to start focusing in again. I need to start really making smart decisions about the match situation, the ball, and I don't have to be thinking about my own performance and how many runs I've got, because ultimately, if I focus on the process of how I'm going to score the runs, the outcome of scoring 50 or scoring 100 will look after itself with a bit of luck.
And how does somebody, if you're thinking to yourself, right, you know, I'm getting into that area where I feel like I'm getting out too often, how do you sort of stop yourself thinking about, you know, projecting into the future or thinking about the past, and basically getting out of the moment? How do you keep yourself in the moment? What can you say to yourself when you find yourself slipping away?
Well, I think it's not just what you say. You can also create your own break between the previous ball and the next one, which is often one of the challenges, really. So if you look back over the history of time, there's been some brilliant examples of people that have been quite consistent with stepping away from the stumps. Alex Stewart always used to talk about walking away from the pitch, and then when he crossed one of the lines to go back into his batting stance, that was his time to switch on to the next ball. So to almost say that was his physical signature, to say, right, the last ball's gone, we've dealt with that, whether I've smacked it for four through cover or whether it's beating me outside off stump, and then as soon as I go over that line, that is me in the next place for the next ball. So that's a real physical way, and having a real delineation between one ball and the next. And that can work for people really well. It's certainly something that I've had success with. It doesn't have to be based around lines. It can be based around, for example, Jonathan Trott and some of his little scrapings of the floor and whatever. So every time he scraped the floor and dug his hole, what he was doing there was drawing a line under the previous ball. So there's some physical things that we can then link to our mental state and what we're thinking at the time, which helps us to get from one ball to the next.
And now it's time for the Soapbox on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. That's a minute on the clock, and one of the members of the team gets to talk about whatever subject is on their mind this week. This week, it's Sam Lavery. Over to you, Lavers.
Okay, well, today I'm just going to talk about exams, and for a lot of people, especially those young cricketers who are around the world, and those in the UK at the moment, will be going through their own exam nightmares or successes or whatever it may be. And for a lot of people, it's something that can bring a lot of stress to them, and it can make their life pretty difficult. I've seen lots of guys who've got absorbed in exams completely, and they've left their sport and they've disappeared for 6 weeks from the cricket field, and subsequently it's not been the most successful. So I just want to try and remind people that by spending a bit of time focusing on your sport and a bit of time doing something that's physically active but also is a distraction from that environment, then you can probably find that you'll actually free up your mind and you'll get yourself away from that stressful environment, which will put you in a better situation where you will succeed. And the other thing is, for those who are of the sporting nature, it's another challenge to try and get everything fitting in. It's a difficult thing to do, but take it as a challenge. Take it as something really exciting rather than a chore, because it will bring you success in the long run.
And that is the end of another show. Before we leave, we are going to decide on the winner of this week's competition. Of course, that's the online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And the questions that got sorted out today, hopefully anyway, was Andrew's question about coaching women and girl cricketers, and Harlit's question about getting beyond 20s and 30s with the bat. Which one did you prefer this week, Gerris?
I'm going to go with Andrew's question. It's a really interesting point that he brought up, and some interesting observations about some of the England women's team bowlers over time. But to me, you know, starting points, it's preference. It's the same thing as we should be dealing with every person. And as research comes out, then maybe that will influence us going forward. But certainly at this point in time, it's a pretty good starting point.
Fantastic. Congratulations to you. And Gareth, if someone was thinking about sending in their question, getting it answered, and having the chance to win a prize themselves, how could they get in touch with us?
They could give us a call, David, on 0203 239 7543, or drop us an email on coach@pitchvision.com.
That's correct. There's also social media available as well. You can find us on Facebook. It's facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy. And you can also seek us out on Twitter at PitchVisionAcad. You can also listen to the show every week by going to your favourite podcast app, doing a search for Pitch Vision Academy, and then clicking on the subscribe button to get that to come to you automatically every week. And if you want to get the show notes or download the show directly onto your computer, or look at some of the other stuff that's hanging around there at Pitch Vision Academy, then go to our website, which is pitchvision.com/academy, and click on the podcast link for all the previous shows going right back to the beginning. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week. But until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Lavis.
Cheers, fellas.
Thanks, guys.